Now our sixth and seventh grade class will come up and share with us information about the new holiday of Chalukah.
Chalukah is a week-long celebration of our Unitarian Universalist principles. The holiday first emerged in 2005 out of a wish to have a holiday organized around Unitarian Universalist values. Chalukah begins on the first Monday in December and lasts 7 days. Each day, a chalice is lit, and the day is spent reflecting on the meaning of that day's principle and doing a good deed that honors that principle. First principle is each person is important. Write a letter, send a card, offer an apology or forgiveness.
The second principle is be kind in all you do. Volunteer at a food pantry, donate to a shelter, smile at everyone you see.
The third principle is we're free to learn together. Give a UU, a chalice, or favorite hymn. Host a UU gathering. Extend words of peace to a UU you've hurt in the past.
Fourth principle is we search for what is true. Share what you know with someone who would like to learn. The fifth. I forgot. All people need a voice. Help a political party. Write a letter. Help a community at church. Committee at church.
The sixth principle is build a fair and peaceful world. Write a letter for a global cause. Donate to an organization like UNICEF or Amnesty International.
The seventh principle is we care for Earth's lifeboat. Start a compost pile. Eat dinner outdoors. Wake up early to enjoy a sunrise. Help out or donate to an animal shelter.
Thank you very much. Now we would like to invite all of our children and youth to please come up and help sing a song.
Where did the Chalukah thing come from? Is that a UUA thing?
I read about it.
It's so cool.
It was a group of theology students that came up with the idea. Yeah, it's on Facebook.
Wow, look at that.
I know, right? I think we need to move the Chalukah. There's a lot of people around the fire. We're bumping into the shop.
Carol Johnson's song called A Little Bit of Light.
And when we are on the last verse, we invite you to join in with us. And the words of the last verse, and I will turn around and indicate so you'll know it's time for you to join in. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. The Christmas Story. A decree went out from Caesar Augustus, who ruled Palestine. He wanted to know the number of people in his kingdom. For that reason, he requested the names of all the people, and everyone had to return to the birthplace of his ancestors. Joseph was of the family of David. Therefore, Mary and Joseph journeyed to Bethlehem, the birthplace of David. Exhausted from the long journey, they arrived in Bethlehem at night. There was no available place to sleep at the inns or at any of the homes, as a great number of people had gone there at the king's request. Having no place to sleep, Mary and Joseph went to the outskirts of Bethlehem and there found a stable where the shepherds of Bethlehem kept their cattle. It was here that they planned to spend the night. Around midnight, the stars in the heavens lit up the stable, and Mary gave birth to a baby boy. She wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger in the stable. The first to hear of the birth of Jesus were the shepherds of Bethlehem, who were watching their sheep. An angel from heaven brought them the joyous tidings and told them to go to the town of Bethlehem, where they would find the babe in a straw-filled manger. The heavens shone with light, and the angels began to sing. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace and goodwill toward men. The shepherds hastened to the stable, where they found Jesus Christ as a babe in swaddling clothes, laying in a manger of straw. They worshipped the newborn and related to Joseph and Mary what they had seen and heard from the angels in the heavens. When Jesus Christ was born, there appeared in the far east an unusually bright star. Seeing this star, three wise men knew that the promised Savior of the world had been born, whom they were anxiously awaiting. So they started out to find him. The star in the heavens showed them the way to Bethlehem, and they came to the stable where Jesus lay in the manger. The wise men entered and saw the child with his mother and fell on their knees. Gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh were laid at his feet.
Thank you, Greta. That was beautiful. It's important to be familiar with that story to really be able to appreciate the best Christmas pageant ever. The Herdmans were the worst kids in the history of the world. They lied and stole and played with matches. They were so awful, you could hardly believe they were real. There were six of them. Ralph, Imogen, Leroy, Claude, Ollie, and Gladys. They were skinny and stringy-haired and dirty and all different sizes with all different black and blue places where they had clonked each other. They lived over a garage, and when they didn't have anything else to do, they would bang the garage door up and down and try to squash each other or the mailman or their crazy one-eyed cat. Everybody stayed away from them. Then one day, they showed up in Sunday school. They stole all the money out of the collection plate and drew mustaches on everybody in the Bible. And although nobody knows how, they took over our annual Christmas pageant. Our Christmas pageant is always the same. Kids in bathrobes and bedsheets acting out the story of Mary, Joseph, and the baby Jesus being born. Everybody knows the story. Well, everybody except the Herdmans. That didn't stop them from picking out all the best parts for themselves. "I'll be the Mary," Imogen yelled, "and Ralph, he'll be the Joseph." Everybody else was afraid to volunteer at that point. That left three Herdmans, Leroy, Claude, and Ollie, to be the wise men, and the worst Herdman of them all, to be the angel of the Lord. "Me," Gladys hollered, "I'll be that. What is it?" So then somebody had to read the whole story to them about the star and the shepherds and how there was no room at the inn and how the baby Jesus slept in a manger. herdmen were shocked. They stuck him out in the barn, Imogene yelped, and they tied Jesus up in rags and put him in a feed box. Well, at least we put Gladys in the dresser drawer. Then they heard about the wise men bringing gifts of oil and frankincense. Claude said, "What good is smelly oil? If we're the wise men, let's bring pizza." Every year, somebody lent us their baby to be Jesus. Not this year. Nobody would trust a herdman with their baby. So Imogene offered to steal one from the supermarket. "There's always babies in the carts there," she said. "Let's forget about the baby," someone said. "We used a doll instead." Every rehearsal was an adventure. Leroy wanted to chase the mean innkeeper out of town, and Claude and Ollie wanted to run off with the baby to keep him safe. Imogene said she would not name him Jesus, she would name him Bill, and she would not let the wise men worship him. "Get away from that baby," she barked at them. "You might have germs." When Gladys found out that the angel of the Lord appeared out of nowhere in the black of the night, she was sure it was Amazing Comics. "Shazam!" she yelled, smacking the kid next to her. Gladys loved to smack things. Our Mary was loud and bossy. The wise men were sneaky, and the angel of the Lord came from outer space. This was going to be the worst Christmas pageant ever. Some people wanted to cancel the whole thing. The minister said, "I don't think anybody's going to come to see it." But they were wrong. Everybody came just to see what the herdmans would do. When the curtain opened, Ralph and Imogene stood in the wings, frozen, as if they weren't sure what to do. They weren't pushing or hitting or being herdmans. The chorus waited and hummed and hummed and waited like an old refrigerator. When they finally came in, Imogene had slung the baby Jesus doll over her shoulder and then thumped it on the back twice, hard. There was a gasp. It didn't seem right to burp the baby Jesus. But then that was the whole point of Jesus. He was a real person, and he started out as a real baby. His parents were real too. As real as Imogene with her veil all crooked and Ralph with his hair sticking out, as if they had slept in their clothes out in the barn, just like in the real story. Then Gladys came out from behind the shepherds, shoving them out of her way and stepping on everybody's feet. "Hey," she yelled, "unto you a child is born. He's in the barn." She made it sound like it was the best news in the whole world. Right behind Gladys came the wise men, but they didn't have the usual frankincense and gold and oil, and they didn't have pizza. Instead, Leroy was carrying something big and heavy. It was the ham from the herdman's food basket. The church gave them one every year. The herdmans had never given anything away except clonks on the head, so you had to be impressed. The herdmans were giving the baby Jesus their Christmas ham. Then the wise men were supposed to leave and go home, but instead, they just sat down. Actually, it seemed like the right thing to do. After all, they had come a long ways, and you wouldn't expect them just to hand over the ham and leave. It seemed natural, too, to burp a baby who might be fussy or tired, and for someone to tell people where the baby was so they wouldn't have to wander all over the place. Somehow, every wrong thing the herdmans did seemed right and natural. And then, as everyone sang Silent Night, Imogene started to cry. In the candlelight, her face was all shiny with tears. Awful old Imogene in her crookedy veil, crying as if Christmas had just come over her all at once. When everyone left the church that night, it was cold and clear with crunchy snow underfoot and bright, bright stars in the sky. Everyone said there was something different this time, something special. And though no one could say exactly what that something was, everyone agreed it was the best Christmas pageant ever. So for many people, the real meaning of Christmas is about the birth of Jesus and the hope that that brought to the world. And for many people in this congregation, that too is true for them. But for many people in this congregation, the joy of the holidays at this time of year is not celebrated as much around the birth of Christ. And that is one of the richness and the gifts of this congregation, is that some of us can value that to the greatest degree and some of us don't, and yet we still gather here together to worship together and honor that which we do value. As we're celebrating the winter holidays, winter solstice, Hanukkah, Chalukah, Kwanzaa, and Christmas, one of the themes that runs through all of them is the idea of sharing and caring and giving. And that is something that the Herdmans do a beautiful job exemplifying for all of us. For them, for family who never gave anything before, to be so moved by this story to want to give their Christmas ham to the baby Jesus, even over pizza, is a good sign about giving and sharing. So I talked with our kids a little bit about what this season means for them in terms of giving, sharing, and caring, and how they have ideas of how they've done this or can do this in their lives. So our kindergarten through fifth graders did a beautiful job in a very abbreviated amount of time last Sunday, illustrating pictures of ideas about sharing, caring, and giving that we're going to enjoy right now while we listen to Susan Werner sing, "I'm Going to Help Somebody."
What do I do? Plenty and then some. What do I do? I got plenty and then some. What do I do now? I go out and help somebody. Get plenty and then some too. I got a roof over my head. What do I do? A roof over my head. What do I do? I got a roof over my head. I do now. I go out and help somebody get a roof over their head too. I got supper on the table. What do I do? I got supper on the table. What do I do? I got supper on the table. What do I do now? I go out and help. Supper on the table too. That's what I do. Cause I got it to give.
I got it to give.
And when you got enough to give away, well, that's the only way to live.
up, our 8th and 9th graders are going to come up and share with us about the history of Hanukkah.
A long time ago, there was a king. Antiochus was his name. He ruled a vast empire that stretched from the borders of Egypt to the mountains of Persia. But he was a nervous king. He was nervous because his kingdom was so large, and he worried that someday, some group of his subjects would decide they did not want to be ruled by him anymore, and rebel. But he had an idea. King Antiochus reasoned that he could unite his various subjects by getting them to adopt to one culture, the same language, the same fashions, and the same religion. And that plan was going well until he got to the land of Judea. The Judeans, or the Jews, worshipped one God. And they were not happy with Greek soldiers telling them that they had to worship Greek gods. The Greek soldiers took over the Jews' temple. They destroyed the Jewish items and built a statue of the Greek god Zeus. Jewish man who had become Greek tried to convince his friends to accept the Greek's religion by sacrificing a pig in the Jewish temple. This made the Jews very angry, but none more than Mattathias, a respected Jewish priest. Mattathias killed the Jewish traitor right there on the spot. Then he and his followers fled to the hills around Judea. Mattathias and his followers hid in the wilderness. And managed to fend off the Greek soldiers using guerrilla fighting tactics. Not long after, Mattathias died. But his son Judah took over as leader. Judah came to be called Maccabee, which is Hebrew for hammerer. Eventually, a Greek general named Gorgias decided to trounce the rebellious Jews once and for all. General Gorgias assembled a massive force, including war elephants from India. However, the Maccabees quickly killed the elephant handlers and broke through the Greeks' troops. The Maccabees returned to Jerusalem victorious, but they found their temple in shambles. With the statue of the Greek god Zeus in place of their altar, Judah ordered that the temple be cleansed and a new altar built. Jewish law required them to light the menorah in the temple every night. Unfortunately, the Maccabees only found one flask of oil that had not been spoiled. By some miracle, the menorah burned for 8 days straight, and that is why today the Jews celebrate Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights.
It's a multi-physical experience.
So Peter, Paul, and Mary wrote a song inspired by that story.
That very same story.
I was trying to be careful there. So you might say this is the dramatic version of the story. Anyway, this one is called Light One Candle. We're going to be ready to sing in just a sec, and we're going to have you join us. It's a great song, actually, and we hope you will enjoy singing it with us. Are we set, boys?
Yep,
all right, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, the thanks their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured, when their right to resist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice, justice and freedom demand. But light one candle for the wisdom to know, when the peacemaker's time is at hand.
Now, Rob Oakleaf will share with us a little bit about ministry with community for our special collection today.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. So I come out here about once a year and talk to you guys. And I am very good at doing a spiel about ministry with community. I'm very comfortable with it. And then I sit with all of you, and I listen to what you say. And typically, I get up here, and I don't do my usual spiel because a lot of thoughts kind of bubble up. And I always get nervous in front of you guys because I'm good with my spiel. I'm not always good necessarily at speaking off the cuff. You guys don't need the spiel. You know, you guys get it. The kids get it in their drawings, the story of the Christmas pageant, Diane's very thoughtful words afterward. And, you know, that kind of made me think. Ministry with community. A lot of people, first of all, think that I'm a minister. I'm not a minister. The Gaytheist movement isn't that organized yet. But I do work at a place that's very driven by the values of openness and peace and justice, and those are all the things that I'm hearing about every time that I come out to see this congregation. And, of course, I'm not always particularly comfortable with all congregations, and it's always so marvelous to be in a space where I know that I can be honest and everybody is open and everybody is respectful. And those are the exact same things we do down at ministry. We open our doors to anyone who is seeking any kind of service. And people are coming. You know, this past fiscal year, we served 133,000 meals. That's 13,000 meals more than the year before, and that was 15,000 more than the year before that. So it's a challenging time, but we're rising to that challenge, and we do it with the support of all the fabulous people here. We do it with financial support. We do it with the volunteers. I look out, and I see a lot of volunteers and employees and some former employees. What's going on, Sasha? The social worker is so nice, we hired her twice. But it's just so tremendously important that we share those values and that we work on those values and we do it all together because it really is a group effort. So thank you very much for allowing me the honor to speak today. I will say, no pressure, but White Wine in the Sun happens to be one of my most favorite songs in the world. And I often cry. But it's so meaningful to us. We're working on these challenges. We've got an exciting year coming up. Make sure you keep your eye on us because we're going to have some big announcements coming down the pike here in just a few months. So, again, thank you so much. Happy holidays. I love a new holiday. That's terrific. I especially like, was it Principal 3? 2? Come down and volunteer. That's what I'm saying. All right. Thank you very much, you guys, and have a wonderful Sunday.
Sentimental life.
That was beautiful. Now if I could have everyone read with me the giving thanks for that which sustains us. From the countless gifts we each have been given, gifts of life and love and sustenance, we bring these small portions to share in the works of love, which none of us can accomplish alone. And now our 10th through 12th grade class is going to come and enlighten us about winter solstice throughout the ages.
This is the darkest day of the year. Cultures all reacted in different ways to the coming of darkness and cold. 3,000 years ago, the naturally curious Chinese determined the shortest day by measuring the length of shadows. These early astronomers knew that as the sun appeared higher in the sky, the shadows would get shorter and the days would get longer. In ancient Rome, about 2,000 years ago, the Romans celebrated the winter solstice with festivals and merrymaking, giving evergreen branches as signs of good luck. These plants reminded them of the coming spring and the fact that winter would not last forever. The Inca celebrated with a festival to honor the sun around the same time as celebrations in Sweden about 600 years ago. They used reflective surfaces to heat cotton, which then burst into flames. They carried it to temples and kept it burning all year long in honor of the sun.
Sweden, about 600 years ago, held a celebration called St. Lucia's Day. Boys sang to neighbors, and girls wore wreaths of candles and evergreen to rekindle the sun's fire. Today, people still celebrate the light with burning Yule log, although they no longer worry the sun will disappear forever. Some pagans burn Yule logs as our ancestors did long ago. Birch, oak, or pine, decorated with pine needles, dried cranberries, holly, cinnamon sticks, and pine cones. In some families, before the Yule log is burned, a wish will be written for the upcoming year and added to the log.
Today, we invite you to write your own solstice wishes upon the slips of paper that can be found at your seats. After the service, if you wish, ribbon will be provided to tie your wishes to the tree in the lobby, or you may take them home with you to do what you wish with them. Thank you very much.
While you're writing your wishes, Nick and Duncan will be performing Blackbird for us as soon as they find their parts.
Oh, their chords. Oh, no.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to arise. black routine of night. See sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly into the light of the dark black eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the light of the dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. Ooh, all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. Yeah, you are only waiting for this moment to arise. Yeah, you are only waiting for this moment to arise. Yeah, you are only waiting for this moment.
Now we invite everyone to join us. Stand if you're willing and able, and sing back the hall. Reverend Dave went to the library and was checking out some Christmas and solstice and seasonal books, and he found the best Christmas pageant ever, which I thought was a great find. He also found a wonderful book entitled Christmas Peace, which he really loved. And so we're about to hear, it's a poem written by Maya Angelou and with illustrations. So in honor of Dave in his rehab center in California recovering from his stroke, We'll send him some good wishes and healing vibes as we enjoy Maya Angelou's voice and saying her poem, Christmas Peace, with the images.
Amazing Peace by Maya Angelou. Read for you by the author.
When I was invited to attend the Christmas tree lighting at the White House and to deliver a poem on the occasion, I was honored. Tsunami, a major earthquake, Katrina, and Rita had already happened to our world. I thought of the evacuees and realized that in times of hostilities and natural disasters, each human being becomes an evacuee. I thought that what we need now most, more than food and water, is peace. I wrote this poem, Amazing Peace. Thunder rumbles in the mountain passes, and lightning rattles the eaves of our houses. Flood waters await in our avenues. Snow falls upon snow falls upon snow to avalanche over unprotected villages. The sky slips low and gray and threatening. We question ourselves, what have we done to so affront nature? We interrogate and worry God. Are you there? Are you there really? Does the covenant you made with us still hold? Into this climate of fear and apprehension, Christmas enters, streaming lights of joy, ringing bells of hope, and singing carols of forgiveness high up in the bright air. The world is encouraged to come away from rancor, come the way of friendship. It is the glad season. Thunder ebbs to silence, and lightning sleeps quietly in the corner. Flood waters recede into memory. Snow becomes a yielding cushion to aid us as we make our way to higher ground. Hope is born again in the faces of children. It rides on the shoulders of our aged as they walk into their sunsets. Hope spreads around the earth, brightening all things, even hate, which crouches breeding in dark corridors. In our joy, we think we hear a whisper. At first, it is too soft, then only half heard. We listen carefully as it gathers strength. We hear a sweetness. The word is peace. It is loud now, louder than the explosion of bombs. We tremble at the sound. We are thrilled by its presence. It is what we have hungered for. Not just the absence of war, but true peace, a harmony of spirit, a comfort of courtesies, security for our beloveds and their beloveds. We clap hands and welcome the peace of Christmas. We beckon this good season to wait a while with us. We Baptist and Buddhist, Methodist and Muslim, say, come, peace, come and fill us and our world with your majesty. We, the Jew and the Jainist, the Catholic and the Confucian, implore you, stay a while with us, so we may learn by your shimmering light how to look beyond complexion and see community. It is Christmas time, a halting of hate time. On this platform of peace, we can create a language to translate ourselves to ourselves and to each other. At this holy instant, we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ into the great religions of the world. We jubilate the precious advent of trust. We shout with glorious tongues the coming of hope. All the earth's tribes loosen their voices to celebrate the promise of peace. We, angels and mortals, believers and non-believers, look heavenward and speak the word aloud, peace. We look at our world and speak the word aloud, peace. We look at each other, then into ourselves, and we say without shyness or apology or hesitation, peace, my brother, Peace, my sister. Peace, my soul.
May the sacredness of this season and the sweet return of the light nourish your soul. And may we remember to let all that we do be done in love. Go in peace.